This is the Lembit Opik Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Lembit Opik here on today's News Talk TNT, where we find the facts, kill the spin, and tell it like it is from stories all around the world. Yesterday, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Rishi Sunak, apologised for the contaminated blood scandal. We talked to Stuart McLean, one of the victims who's been fighting for justice. This is the biggest scandal ever to face the health service, involving thousands of deaths and tens of thousands of victims, and the cover-up which spans all parties in all governments for decades. Interestingly enough, France did it better. How were they able to deal with this 30 years ago and we could not? We also speak to Alan Cook to get his thoughts on the Julian Assange situation, where there was some glimmer of hope for Julian Assange. Alan Cook has been the one person uniquely in the United Kingdom to raise this question. With modern technology, why do they physically need him in the United States? Why can't they try him? If indeed he should be tried at all from the United Kingdom. Very interesting point. Alan Cook will share his views on that. Ingrid Tarrant, who is a major star in the UK, joins us for our daily news review. And in the second hour, we will speak to Christopher Head, the post office scandal victim, who will talk about the government cover-ups and corruption with commentary from TNT's very own Johnny Vedmore and Basil Valentine. The big picture here is ones of cover-up and disappointment with the state. I suppose thematically, that is the increasing story here in the United Kingdom. I wonder if the next general election will be fought on the question of probity. However, the problem there is that both Labour and the Conservatives are mired in this, together with the Lib Dems, who enjoyed a brief and, in my view, disastrous spell in a coalition government with the Conservatives. So who to vote for? Perhaps that's something that we can cover today. One other story, which I notice is developing, the International Criminal Court, ICC, has issued an arrest warrant, not just for the leaders of Hamas, but also for Benjamin Netanyahu, the leader of Israel, causing outrage in Hamas from Benjamin Netanyahu and from America. And indeed from the United Kingdom. Just give you one point here, which struck me as somewhat ironic. When a senior government minister in the United Kingdom was asked, what do you think about this? The response was, well, we don't recognize Palestine as a nation state. And therefore, the ICC making a claim to issue an arrest warrant against them is meaningless to us. We don't recognize it. Think about the implications of that, the unintended consequence of his statement. They do recognize Israel. So presumably, therefore, they do recognize the arrest warrant issued by the ICC against Benjamin Netanyahu. In other words, if we're to believe what the minister said this morning on mainstream television, they do not recognize any arrest warrant issued against Hamas, but they do recognize an arrest warrant issued against Benjamin Netanyahu. Nice work, minister. How do you wriggle out of that one? It's something I will definitely be following on social network and raising on social network too. Very difficult to unsay something which you so unequivocally said in front of the nation and in front of the world. What we're seeing, of course, here is double standards. Depends where you think the whole conflict in the Gaza Strip and Palestine and with Israel began. If you say it's the 7th of October, you could arguably say that Hamas is responsible. If you go back to the 1940s, the situation is much more complex. Also, in terms of the death tolls, it's quite interesting. Hundreds or over 1,000 people were arguably killed by Hamas on the 7th of October. Over 34,000 people have been killed in response. Question of proportionality is raised here. Lots of innocence on both sides, of course. But when it comes down to it, the whole question of genocide has raised its ugly head. And we have Joe Biden saying this is outrageous too, even though Joe Biden has made pretty much the same criticisms as the ICC. Where does this go? We'll see how it plays out. But let's remember, it's a presidential election year. That makes the whole thing more complicated in the United States. What we do know, though, is the killing continues in Gaza, and the killing continued for decades in the UK, thanks to a cover-up in the National Health Service. not a very bright day, really, all round, but somebody who will shed some light onto it in just a minute and perhaps either give bad news with a joyous face or just bad news is Gemma Cooper. All of that with me, Len Bitopic, right here on TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Remember, you can call us as well. You'll find the numbers at the tntradio.live website. Also, you can get involved in the chat there. Very packed program today, but if I get time, I will share some of your comments too. Gemma Cooper, I know you get midweek blues. I'm having them today. So much bad news, so much disappointment in the state.
Well, yeah, I mean, the infected blood scandal, the reaction is as depressing, actually, as the story. It's the biggest story in the UK today. I know you're going to be discussing it at length throughout the breakfast show here in the UK on TNT. But there are patterns, let's just say, to the way this has been handled, to previous scandals and institutional cover-ups. And also, I just think, paves the way for another scandal and medical institutional cover-up, which we'll see in another few decades' time, which, of course, will be the jabs. You know, it's always easier to apologise after the event and not deal with the event itself. And this isn't the only time that this has happened. This is an absolutely terribly depressing story, but we'll get to it in just a minute. There are some other stories kicking around. I mean, the government is to offer the unemployed boot camps here in the UK to solve the unemployment problem and the gap which we now have in the labour market, because we haven't got as many foreign workers coming into the UK. That's got a lot to do with Brexit, actually, and European workers going home after Brexit was introduced. But the idea is there'll be intensive training courses to retrain the unemployed, get them back into the labour market and off benefits. And also, again, a bit of, you know, institutional cover-up, if you want to call it that. We can see the palace PR machine in full flow talking about Kate Middleton today. She didn't attend a landmark report from her charity, the Early Years Foundation, Royal Foundation Centre for Early Childhood, which she's the boss of, ostensibly. And Kensington Palace issuing some very carefully worded press releases about Kate, her absence from public life, her non-return to duties. All very, very orchestrated. And isn't it funny how the mainstream media has gone very, very quiet about Kate? They've obviously had their orders. A lot of speculation on social media still. I wouldn't normally talk about the royals, but I do think it's one to keep an eye on, the way it's been handled by the palace and the mainstream press.
The royal family often used to be a go-to if there was lots of bad news and we wanted to have a good news story. I've noticed that the state-sponsored British TV station now insists on having a lightweight, fluffy little cultural story towards the end of the hour. They were talking about Taylor Swift today. Is that really the most important thing happening in the United Kingdom right now? Taylor Swift's coming to the UK to do a bit of singing? I don't think so. On the other hand, while Kate Middleton's just one person, I suppose it's a bit inconvenient. There's so much illness in the royal family. Doesn't distract from the fact, though, does it, that we've got these huge scandals at the moment. The two that we know about, namely the post office scandal, where a lot of people were put behind bars without just cause, and the people who did it maybe should be behind bars. And now this, an arguably even worse scandal, where thousands have died and tens of thousands are ill because of a cover-up in the NHS. How do you think anyone can actually trust the British state now? And as you said, it's just looming that the same thing will happen with vaccinations for COVID.
Well, I mean, I would stake money on it that it will happen again with the jabs. It will. It absolutely will. And it wasn't just a cover up by the NHS. I mean, I know you'll be talking about the report at length, the inquiry report that was published yesterday, but it was a systematic cover up between the politicians, the civil service and the National Health Service. Everybody closed ranks to hide the truth. This is the findings of the report. And the inquiry itself could have been launched in the 1980s after concerns were raised, but everybody was working furiously hard to stop the truth coming out. There are calls from the campaigners for compensation, we're talking about people facing justice, corporate manslaughter charges. People want brought against hospitals and other institutions that knowingly, the official line, you see, Embit, was nobody knowingly issued, gave somebody contaminated blood. Nobody knowingly did it. Everybody passed the buck. Everybody's pointing the finger at each other, all the different organizations, all the different government departments and the NHS. But everyone's apologizing after the event and saying how terrible it was. We had Rishi Sunak saying yesterday it was a day of shame, a moral failure at the heart of our national life, where doctors, civil servants and ministers put reputations above patient safety. Well, you could apply that to the last 4 years. Absolutely. And the report itself, Sir Brian Langstaff's conclusions were every institution closed ranks to hide the truth. There were decades-long moral failures at the heart of national life, from the National Health Service to the civil service to ministers in successive governments. At every level, the people institution in which we place our trust failed us in the most disturbing way. Everybody's apologising this morning. Everybody's saying there was a cover-up. But this has echoes of other big scandals, as it were. The post office inquiry, as you rightly say, is one. And also, do you remember our dodgy Dave, who was then Prime Minister? He apologised for Bloody Sunday, which happened in Northern Ireland in 1972. Lots of cover-ups about that. Eventually, he stood up and apologised for that in 2010. So it seems to be this pattern emerging of these great scandals, which everybody knows about at the time. Everybody's working furiously to hide what really happened. And then you apologise 30 to 40 years later. Everyone goes, OK, we can draw a line under it. Everyone's apologised. You know, that's what everybody wants. We'll throw them a bit of money and it'll all go away until the next one, which is what I feel we're seeing here. We're definitely seeing patterns. And the BBC, the way they've responded to this story, I mean, this is a direct quote from their political editor. The picture is painted in this inquiry of a rigid, inflexible, inhuman state conspiring collectively to deny not only justice, but the truth. Well, I mean, from the BBC, considering its position on medical matters in the last 4 years, I think that's an absolutely extraordinary statement. And talking of conspiracy, the last words should come from Sir Brian Langstaff, the author of this report. He says there was a cover-up, not in the sense of a handful of people plotting in an orchestrated conspiracy to mislead. Well, I think some would disagree with that, but in a way that was more subtle, more pervasive and more chilling in its implications. It was all to save face and there has been a hiding of much of the truth, a withholding of the truth was his words there. I think this will happen again and again. I have to say, look at these patterns. Bloody Sunday, the post office inquiry, Hillsborough, were all the football fans, you know, and it was about protecting the police. It wasn't about seeking justice for the football fans. Hillsborough, anybody can go and look that up if you don't live in the UK. You know, terrible footballing tragedy and people corralled and suffocated because of institutional failings by the police. You know, and at the time, nobody wants to know. It's all about protecting institutions, protecting the system. We will see this again, Lambert, in my opinion, and it will all be to do with vaccine injury, vaccine harms and the cover-ups that the pharmaceutical companies and the government and the medical profession all know about, and all of the excess deaths which are now being swept under the carpet. That's just my take on it. It's pretty depressing for a Tuesday, but I know you'll be discussing this at length in the rest of the show.
A couple of other thoughts about it. The people who apologise invariably aren't the people who feel guilty. In other words, we've got this conspiracy where you do something wrong 40 years ago and your successors apologise. So Rishi Sunak can stand there with his sanctimonious humility. But if you really pushed him, he said, well, actually, I didn't do it. I'm just saying I'm sorry for the other people. And that's the problem. It certainly happened with Cameron and Bloody Sunday. Certainly happened. It's happening with this now. Interestingly, with the post office, though, you've still got culprits in there. Ed Davey, who's the leader of the Liberal Democrats, my old party, he was actually responsible for the post office when they were trying to, these sub-postmasters who were being wrongly accused, were trying to say to meet him, and he wouldn't meet them. It's very difficult to get away from that. And now with the, what looks like a cover-up to me with the vaccinations, I notice how quickly they're happy to move on from that and not really talk about it. But there are enough people still around to be able to get them and hold them to account as well. But I don't know about you, Gemma, I'm becoming quite depressed about this. I feel that the whole body politic protects itself and has this statute of limitations where you serve your time, you clear off, and then you wait for your successors to apologise when it doesn't matter anymore.
Absolutely. And that is the take we're getting from all of these big stories where, you know, it's 30 to 40 years. We'll apologise after the event. I mean, the campaigners are calling for Sir Kenneth Clark, who was the health secretary at the time. Ken Clark, I'm sure you remember him, the, you know, stalwart of the Conservative Party. They're saying he should be stripped of his peerage and corporate manslaughter charges should be brought. The problem is, of course, is a lot of the doctors who administered knowingly their contaminated blood. They knew it was contaminated. They knew it was cheap. And they wanted to experiment on some of the children in their school in Wales, haemophiliac children. You know, they knew, and it was cheaper to experiment on them in terms of haemophilia research than it was to experiment on the poor chimpanzees. That's been a document that was released as part of the inquiry. But a lot of these doctors are now dead. That's the problem. So justice can never really be served. Ken Clark said it at the time. He felt he was being made a scapegoat because he was something of a celebrity. No, he was the health secretary. You were responsible, mate, along with your department. So again, all this buck passing. But it is a pattern. I'm seeing a pattern here. And it's about 20 to 30 or 30 to 40 years after the event. So effectively nearly two generations. So you can just about remember it. You can just about, oh yeah, there was that story, you know, the post office, oh, it's that story about the contaminated blood. Oh, well, it's all done and dusted now. It seems to be orchestrated to me. Call me conspiratorial. These are the facts I'm looking at this morning, and the timings, not just of the infected blood scandal, HIV and hepatitis C knowingly being put into poor people, but with the post office too. And this inquiry could have been done and dusted in 1980s. The post office inquiry could have been done in the 1990s. Funny how the parallels. Let's see what happens with the jab, shall we?
Yeah, it seems to me that one is about medical power and saving money, which is the blood contamination scandal. The post office one is very dark. I still don't think we've got to the heart of the motives of the people who perpetrated the injustice against the sub-postmasters. It's obviously money again when it comes to the jabs. Just one last point, Gemma. Perhaps, I mean, there are deaths, thousands of deaths associated with this NHS scandal. But the idea that in 21st century Britain, the medical system, the state-sponsored medical system, used children for medical experiments. That's one of the crimes that was judged and treated as a capital offence in Nuremberg after during the Nazi trials. How can something like this happen? It's as a parent myself, I feel rage about this, but I am absolutely disgusted with this country that it was allowed to happen. How do you put it into words? How do you explain to another country why anyone should believe our human rights record when these children have been treated like this?
Well, I think it's an example of a lot of things over the last 4 years that we are seeing these institutions, reputationally at least, crumbling. I don't know if that structurally they're crumbling. I think they will carry on working as they've always worked to protect themselves. But we are seeing things for as they are. And it's only thanks to people power, the tireless efforts of the post office campaign, Mr. Bates, and the post office, and the person who wrote that TV drama, who didn't even think it would generate much interest, the woman who wrote that drama. She thought, oh, it's not a particularly sexy subject. Well, lo and behold, people resonate with it because it's that injustice, which nobody likes. If you're a decent human being, nobody likes it. But it's only because of the campaigning there by people, and also here the Tainted Blood campaign group working for years to see justice. That's the only reason this has happened. But I think we're seeing more of that. People pushing back against the system. People saying, no, this shouldn't have happened, and we're going to fight. And it takes a long time. But if you know, it's that thing, if you keep on, you will have success. You will win. And safety in numbers. People really galvanizing together now. Look at the story we did on the whistleblowers at the NHS last week. Doctors, nurses, and other medical staff gathering together, urging other whistleblowers to get in touch. Mm. There is a sea change in how people are viewing the system. Instead of being cowed by the system, they're standing up to the system. It's tiring, it's exhausting, but people are getting results. And I think it's spurring other people on. That's the only bit of hope I think we can take from this story.
You mentioned whistleblowers, and coming up next, we're going to be speaking to Alan Cook about perhaps the greatest whistleblower of them all, is certainly a positive complicity in whistleblowing. That's Julian Assange. Gemma, thanks very much. That's Gemma Cooper. She'll be joining us again in the next hour. Have your say at tntradio.live. I'm Len Bitopic. This is TNT. See you in a moment.
TNT's Rick Munn.
So while Michelle wiped her phone, Arlene didn't. And Arlene had the full record there. So while Michelle said, well, I don't have those messages anymore, Arlene says, well, I do. So they've been thrown out in the inquiry as well. And as you can imagine, the bitchiness between those two was at nuclear levels during the scandemic. They were an uneasy alliance back then. But of course, Foster's gone. And Michelle is now in the effective First Minister position in Northern Ireland, despite having wiped her phone against legal advice and destroying evidence and misleading the inquiry. She's the First Minister Northern Ireland. What does that tell you? Anything you need to know can be found within that statement in and of itself.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Mann on today's News Talk TNT.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to today's News Talk. Lambert Topic here. We've just been talking about the scandal. That's actually an understatement of a word on this occasion, of the deaths of thousands and the infection of tens of thousands on account of a covered up contaminated blood scandal. A few comments from yourselves. Holly says, I remember a chum saying he liked Ken Clark, who used to be a government minister in the UK, because he wore suede shoes and liked jazz. Kind of sums up the level of attention in the UK. Yeah, you're right, Holly. And there's another good comment from you in a moment. Joseph Bloke says, now on that, children being used for medical experimentation, we can agree, Lambert. It's unforgivable. And if somebody doesn't go to prison for that, then honestly, Britain can never preach about human rights to the world again, in my opinion. Wee Fat Chuck says, I remember Blair getting pop stars to endorse him, pictures of him strumming a guitar and so on. They are shameless charlatans. Holly adds, how can you add trust a health service that seems to be full of incompetence and malice? And on it goes, an awful lot of criticism of the current government situation. And much of it I agree with as well. Keep your calls and comments coming. Go to tntradio.live. And for this, we need whistleblowers. One of the great instruments of exposing bad practice by the state is Julian Assange. You may know that he has been fighting against extradition to America on the basis that he shouldn't be taken there. It's almost a technical reason, but that he's using to defend himself. But many of us think that he's actually absolutely essential to freedom of speech, and he's exposing bad practice. Joining me now is someone who thinks exactly that. It's Alan Cook, who is the one person in Britain who's made a very good point. Why should we extradite him in the first place? Alan, thanks for joining us here on today's News Talk TNT.
Good morning, Lambert. Thank you for having me on.
Well, remind us, first of all, about the latest with Julian Assange. What was the decision yesterday, in your opinion, in your words?
Well, basically, he's been given the right to appeal. So on a technicality, mainly the First Amendment, his rights to the freedom of speech, which, you know, they're massively being eroded over here with all the hate laws, certainly in Scotland. So it's something, you know, I'm a great advocate of freedom of speech and freedom of the press as well. And that is what we're seeing at risk. But it's, you know, it's a breath of fresh air, the announcement yesterday. So, you know, but the guy is still languishing in Belmarsh, which is, you know, by all standards, a horrible place. After 7 years in the Ecuadorian embassy, you know, this guy has paid a heavy price already. And you know, he got married in Belmarsh. He's got two children now. You know, how much is the state's going to push this guy through before they realise that actually they're on the wrong side of this argument?
The fundamental issue here seems to be that he shouldn't have to go there in the first place. Share with us your innovative, but it seems to be fairly obvious observation about physical presence.
Absolutely. they do seem hell-bent on getting him over there, you know, even if it's to actually let him go. But, you know, they're threatening him potentially of 175 years in an American jail in solitary. But the actual legal teams are saying he's more likely to serve 4 to 6 years. So why go through this extradition procedure, which is damaging relations between the two countries, if he's going to serve less potentially than a year or nothing at all in the States? So, you know, for me, that the obvious solution was, after COVID, we've been doing this quite a lot, is just to have a Zoom trial, although they actually use Skype Business now for these sort of procedures. But the technology is there. It's being tested now. It started with hearings. They've had full trials. HMRC are doing it a lot now. Some, up to about 85% of some of their hearings are done on by remote media. So the technology is there. It's working. It's working well. And so his physical presence in the States isn't actually needed unless they are not telling the truth about what really is going to happen to him when he actually gets there and the likelihood of him serving the rest of his life in prison. So it's just, to me, it's a very obvious next step because we've done international trials as well. I think it was the Bank of Kazakhstan took BNY Mellon to court, and they had witnesses in Kazakhstan, they had witnesses in Belgium, in New York. And so it's an international trial, big money at hand here as well. And it worked well. So, you know, there's precedent for international remote court cases already. So, you know, why they can't do this, it escapes me. But I'm not actually sure if Assange's legal team have actually put this option forward.
Okay, stay with us. We're listening to Alan Cook. I want to get into the actual core of the case again. It never fails to shock me what he's actually being accused of and why. You're listening to Len Bitopic here on today's News Talk TNT. See you in a moment.
TNT Radio News.
Hi, everybody.
So many crazy news stories going on right now.
Now, the news. Go.
Matt Boyland here with a quick look at your TNT headlines. The US is threatening to punish the International Criminal Court after its chief prosecutor sought an arrest warrant for Israel's prime minister over alleged war crimes in Gaza. China's accused Washington of deliberately prolonging and profiting off of the war in Ukraine. And Australia's largest telecommunications provider, Telstra, has announced it's axing near 3,000 jobs as the company turns to AI.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Coming up in this hour, we have Ingrid Tarrant, who is something of a celebrity in the United Kingdom, big celebrity in my view, with the news review. But and before that, the view from the cab with our resident cabbie, Steve, who's out and about. But for now, we're still talking with Alan Cook, the one person in Britain who seems to have observed the possibility of having a remote trial if it's really about justice rather than anything else. Alan, thanks for joining us again. You said that if Julian Assange was found guilty, and we'll talk about why he should even be found guilty in a minute, but if he was found guilty, he might serve 5 to 7 years. He's already served 13. So what's the point of even doing the trial?
Absolutely. But well, the first 7 years in the Ecuadorian embassy was, I think, try to escape being returned to Sweden under a rape charge that was dropped. So the Belmarsh 5 years is what I'd say really is time served. And the Americans are saying he's going to get 4 to 6 potentially. So we're getting very close to, you know, the fact that he served is what they're potentially going to give him already. And, you know, apparently his mental health is failing. You know, the last time I saw him, he didn't look too great. So, you know, how much longer are they going to torture this guy over an incident that a lot of people see as a whistleblower incident? So, and also, basically, his defense initially is the fact that he is a journalist and this is in the public interest. And the fact that he's actually exposed wrongdoing by the government, which might be why they're a little bit testy about it.
Yeah, I think you've been quite euphemistic there, Alan. I'm going to express an opinion because I can. As far as I can see, Julian Assange's crime is exposing wrongdoing by the state, not just in this country, but internationally as well. For example, the United States spying on the Germans, who are meant to be their allies. This isn't 1940.
It is.
what would you describe his actual crime, if any?
Well, the hacking side of it, you shouldn't be hacking into systems. You must know something's going to happen to you if you try and hack into government systems. But, you know, that said, I think he's served enough. If thing is, but that's alleged as well. None of this has been proven about the hacking. They do want to get him to court. So everything at the moment is alleged. So actually, you know, he is still an innocent man. So we shouldn't really forget that. But, you know, the states had to go in heavy with why they wanted him, because you're not going to extradite someone on something petty. But in doing so, I think what they've done is actually over-egged it. And now they've made it very difficult to actually get him extradited because of, you know, there's still the potential there for the death sentence, if not 175 years in prison. So by ensuring that they get the extradition, what they may have done is actually ensured that it won't happen. I know they've already said, even up to the Supreme Court, that he is going to be extradited, and Priti Patel said, yes, it's going to go ahead. However, you know, he keeps getting these appeals. So it's going to be interesting what eventually happens. But just in the interest of, you know, goodwill between Australia now, I've been asking Biden to actually stop this. So for goodwill between the countries, I think it's about time now they left him alone.
Now, to misquote Churchill, I think that Assange is merely the one who gave the roar. And that's the point. Other people did the whistleblowing. He simply reported it. And apparently it's now a crime to share wrongdoing by the state. Alan, always good to speak to you. Thanks very much indeed. We'll see how this plays out. We'll probably be still discussing this in 13 years' time. I wonder if Assange will be in, I wonder if he'll be entitled to a pension if he's still in Belmarsh. Thanks very much indeed.
He may be a granddad by then.
Yeah, possibly so. That's Alan Cook, the one person in the country who rightly observes that you don't need to take Julian Assange to America to try him in America. And it simply makes me even more skeptical about the reasons why this is occurring. Do keep your calls and comments coming. I'll try and read them out if I get time. But before we go any further, let's find out what the people of London are saying. From the one man who hears it all from the back of a cab, it's the view from the cab. And that's with Steve McNamara, who joins us now. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm very well and dandy. Good morning.
I don't want to keep you much because points mean prizes and it costs you money to be talking to me and I can't afford the tip. But what's the latest? What's on everyone's lips in London and at the moment?
Yeah, well, I've heard you're a bit tight with the tips, but we'll keep that between ourselves.
you just about get away with that. Just about.
Other than the big political talking issues of the day, which are obviously, you know, Israel, Ukraine and everything else that's going on, the big issue particularly in London that everybody seems to be aware of and everybody's talking about is just the sheer amount of street crime with the phone snatches from these people on these illegal electric bikes. I mean, it's almost impossible now as you drive a cab around this city not to witness certainly one or two a week. And in some cases, you can witness one or two a day. And this is in the centre of town. This is where these people ride up alongside you with these very fast electric bikes. Mm. They snatch your phone and they're gone. And the mystery to everyone is, you know, where are the police? These people, you can see them a mile off. You know, they're balaclavaed up. They're all in black. They're riding these bikes. There's only one reason they're doing it. Why are they allowed to carry on? And it's a major, major concern. I mean, everybody who gets in the cab now has either seen one, lost their phone, knows someone. I mean, it's an epidemic that's completely off the scale. And unfortunately, the police seem absolutely clueless. If you could ever find a policeman in London anymore, which no one seems able to do.
I had two phones snatched in 5 months. I used to live right in the center, and I was quite savvy then. Somehow I just got used to not having to endlessly be afraid of people attacking me and stealing my phone. The first group were actually armed as well. And that was outside Charing Cross police stations, shockingly. The other time was in Trafalgar Square nearby. Why aren't the police doing anything? Why isn't Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, who told us he controlled crime, actually dealing with it? And instead of that, even though he's in charge of the police, he's blaming the police. What's going on, Steve?
Well, I can see what's going on with the police. The mayor in Sadiq has set the Met Police a target. I mean, they're in special measures, as you know. One of the reasons they're in special measures is for their priorities. And yet the mayor has set them a target of 1 million speeding fines a year. You'll be aware now that London has 20 mile an hour speed limits. And the only policeman you ever see, and there's been lots of high profile people tweeting this over the weekend, you'll see him hiding in the bushes in the Bayswater Road or in Park Lane to try and catch someone at 24 miles an hour. Meanwhile, 200 yards up the road, this crime is prolific. And you know, your attitude, well, it's just what happens. And unfortunately, that's becoming the norm. People just accept that if you get a phone out of your pocket in London, someone's going to snatch it. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. It's got to be the easiest thing in the world to stop. London's the most cameraed city in the world. Somebody can sit in a control room, watch these people come into the central area on these bikes. How difficult can it be to target them? You know, take them off the bikes, bring them down, arrest them and get them off the street. Once you've done that for a week and you've got the main profile candidates, the others will go away. It's really not that difficult. But apparently...
I'll tell you something else. Sorry, go ahead. Finish point.
Yeah, but apparently it's beyond the wit of our commissioner. I struggle.
Not just that. I actually do hold Khan responsible. He stood on a ticket of reducing crime. And he hasn't. It's just horrendous. I don't recommend anyone coming to London for their holidays now, because I just don't want to be responsible for them to have that traumatic experience. I was able to track my phone until it was switched off in North London. I even had the street. The police didn't give tuppence. They didn't bother following it up. Oh, get the insurance to pay out. That's more or less what they said. So, in other words, I have to pay for these people's standard of living, these criminals' standard of living. In terms of crime in your cab, do you experience that at all, Steve?
No, we're surprisingly, you know, robberies and attacks on cab drivers in London are incredibly rare, primarily because the vehicle has a petition, secondly because we don't carry cash, and nowadays, someone paying cash in a cab is probably less than 10-20% of people. But you see, the irony again, you just said about the police not being interested in your crime. Had they caught you at 24 mile an hour, they would be writing to you, they would be coming around your house, they would be stopping you in your car a month later if you hadn't filled the forms in. They would be all over you like a cheap suit. And yet when it comes to crime and criminals, it's completely beyond their capability. I mean, you really have got a major problem in London with the police. And this commissioner doesn't seem able to deal with it. We really do need somebody to come in and get them back to what they're supposed to be doing, which is policing, protecting London, and not spending their time playing with speed guns and trying to arrest the very people who are probably the victims of these crimes the day or the week before.
That's because Khan has declared war on the motorist. Apparently, we're all evil. He thinks that we can run a first-world economy on third-world bicycles. Stay with us, Steve. You're listening to Steve McNamara, really the voice on the ground there, with us here on today's News Talk TNT. And Len Bertopic. See you after the break.
My baby's back from the West Coast.
Hear those pictures that you asked for your school project? First day of school, cute as a button.
So long ago.
Oh, here's Grandma Florence after that flood wiped out the whole neighborhood.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Those beans smell heavenly.
Give Mom a little credit.
You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year.
Oh, great idea.
At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
I'm coming to stay with you guys.
Protect your legacy. Plan for natural disasters today. Visit ready.gov/plan.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're traveling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. Prediabetes does. 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, but with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. And you can change the outcome. Take the 1 minute prediabetes risk test today. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org.
You're with Len Bedopik on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Coming up in this part of the show, we'll be talking to Ingrid Tarrant before we do that. Steve McNamara, the view from the cab, a cabbie who I now owe a tip to when I'm in your cab next. I will do that. I'll give you the 10% or whatever I'm supposed to do. What are we meant to give you? What percentage?
Oh, look,
what's normal?
It's a joke. You know, I was obviously winding you up. You know, if somebody wants to tip, I think the average is 10% now. Most of the credit card machines, when you touch them, they offer you an automatic 10%. You say yes or no. So, I mean, that tends to be the norm. I mean, as I said, the big change in London in recent years is that we've gone virtually cashless. You know, we had these machines seated in the back and everybody pays on a card just like they do everywhere else. And it's been good for us. It's brought a lot of business our way. So, we're pleased to do it.
So the question is, but noted anyway, I do give tips actually, as long as the person doesn't deliberately take the long way around. This quick question for you. Steve, you're in central London all the time. Have you been a victim of crime yourself?
No, I haven't. Not that your size or anything like that has got anything to do with it, because as you rightly say, if the guy's got a knife, you know, it doesn't matter how big you are. No, the reality is I'm very, very wary. If I've got my phone out of my pocket, I walk with my arm to the wall. You know, I look around me constantly. I grew up in the 1970s in dodgy parts of London, so it's just sort of ingrained in me. I have a sort of street awareness. I'm constantly looking around. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but it's more unlikely than it's going to happen to somebody else. Look, London is a relatively safe city. Let's you know, for a city the size, it's a safe city. But it's at the moment, this phone snatching thing is out of control. You know, if you keep your phone in your pocket, you'll probably be okay. Just don't communicate.
Yeah, nice words. Say that to teenagers. Thanks very much indeed. That's Steve McNamara giving us the view from the cab. I'll let him go back to earning a crust. A couple of comments. Quite a lot of you sympathetic to Julian Assange, quite clearly. Love it, says Holly. View from a cabbie, perfect take on the rants of the people. I think he was not ranting. I think he was very circumspect. Safest place for them to rob you, Lembit, wee fat shug said. What, that's central London, is it? Or outside the police station? And a good job, Lembit, hard to be cheerful as so much gets exposed, says Barbara Butler. I was asleep till 2020. The thing that cheers me up is people telling the truth. Lots and lots of us doing that. Well, somebody who always tells the truth, somebody I've admired for years, honoured to welcome you to the show. It's Ingrid Tarrant. Ingrid, it's been a while. How have you been? I still owe you a response to a text you sent me months ago. Very sorry about that. How are you?
Really well, really well. Lovely to see you, Len, but it has been a long time.
Yeah, we met in interesting circumstances on a campaigning mission, actually, in central London not that long ago.
Long before that as well.
Oh, decades before that. Decades when you were a small child, I remember. But now, with your life experience, you're here to comment about the news. And let's see how many stories we can get through. Just wondering about how you feel about this arrest warrant being issued against Benjamin Netanyahu, and it has to be said, Hamas.
Yes, I'm all for it. I think what's going on is absolutely atrocious. People are very reluctant to use the word genocide. I've never been reluctant to use that word, because that's what it is. It is systematic. This is women and children. It's indiscriminate. The hospital's been bombed. This is unnecessary. You know, if they're targeting, you can't target a person, Hamas, because it's an ideology. So if one person goes, another person will fill in their shoes, and it'll be spread all over the world. So this is not the way to deal with the problem. It's sitting around a table and coming to a peaceful resolution. Peace has to come at the end of this, because otherwise it'll go on and on forever, because you will never get rid of Israel. Want to get rid of Hamas? They'll never get rid of Hamas.
Yeah. It's like trying to spread water with your hands. This is what happened in Northern Ireland. The British intervention simply acted as a recruiting sergeant for the IRA, and actually the loyalists as well, to an extent. What do you think, Netanyahu? I know this is speculation. What do you think Netanyahu's actual motivation here is? Is it to sweep away Gaza?
It seems like it, because all the time the IDS and families are coming in, and they're seizing land, they're taking the farmers' land away. So it's a creep, it's a land grab at the same time. And that's just on a civilian level. Admittedly, I think from what I understand, some of them are soldiers, so they're from Israel patrolling the land so that the owners can't get back to it. But, you know, I've been accused of being anti-Semitic, being left-wing. I'm none of those things. I just want peace. And I think it's important to point out as well, I can't be wrong in my thinking, because every single Saturday in major cities around the world, there are demonstrations for a ceasefire. This isn't being anti-Semitic at all. This is exactly, it's pure and simple, a ceasefire. This has got to end. They're protesting outside the Knesset every Saturday as well. So these are Israelis themselves who are demonstrating against Netanyahu. He's a very unpopular man, he's made very unpopular decisions. And I don't know what his agenda is. And when Biden really told him to cool it and everything, and that they were probably not going to, or they said they may not provide them with arms if they didn't come to a sort of a different set of rules, he said, well, we'll just like fight with our nails then. He's not giving up. He's on a mission. And maybe that is a mission to just cleanse them.
And the point you're making there is right. It incenses me when they hide behind anti-Semitism as if you simply cannot criticize Benjamin Netanyahu because he happens to be Jewish. It's nothing to do with his religion. It's the fact that he's directly responsible for the deaths of over 30,000 civilians. I'm sure we'll come back to this again. At the same time... go on. Go on, Ingrid.
Oh, sorry. I want to say one other thing, Lembit. In this, Netanyahu saying... he wants the hostages back. But nobody's talking about the Palestinians that are being kept by them. Now, there's only a few hundred hostages. I think there's 128 hostages now in Gaza, being held in Gaza. But there are 4,500 prisoners kept, Palestinians kept in Israel. There were 1,310 held in administrative detention without trial, and nobody's talking about them. You know, this is a two-way street, but it just seems to be like a one, you know, you only hear one side of the story. We've got to look at this in a very much more balanced way.
You could say the same about these claims from what's, in my view, laughably called the anti-extremism czar, Presumably that czar will be trying to get the British government into court, but maybe not. Saying the far left groups are trying to undermine the UK. I thought that the government was trying to undermine the UK, but what do you make of this story?
I don't quite get it. But the UK, we are actually being complicit in this as well. And really, we should be held accountable as well. Do you remember the very beginning when they were voting for the ceasefire? America was the only one that vetoed it, and the UK abstained. I mean, how wishy-washy pathetic is that? You know, too frightened to actually make a statement. So we're all complicit. The UK is very complicit. They're supporting America. There's an interest there. It's geopolitical mess, isn't it?
Yeah. I have to say, the more I see of the way that you got mealy-mouthed ministers like one this morning on the mainstream television saying, oh, well, we can't issue a warrant against Hamas because we don't recognise the state of Palestine, which implies he's made a terrible mistake, Mels, right? That means he must recognise it against Benjamin Netanyahu because he is in charge of a recognised state. It's completely unjoined up thinking. Somewhere else, I think there's not much joined up thinking is on the infected blood scandal, where all of a sudden, as Gemma Cooper, who works with me here, pointed out earlier in the show, you apologize for things that happened 40 years ago so that the people who did it get away scot-free. It's just incredible to me that we experimented on children in this country like the Nazis did in the 40s.
They package it in a very different way, don't they? We didn't know. But the thing is, they did. At the very beginning, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they didn't realise it's infected blood. But the fact that they were taking it from drug addicts and, you know, prisoners, drug addicts, whatever, that has got to lead you to believe, well, they can't be pure-blooded, you know, straight away. Yeah. But then a massive cover. But do you know, Lembit, what really shocks me? This isn't the first. Thalidomide was slightly different because that was more a genuine misunderstanding. But then as soon as they realised what was happening and how it was affecting babies, it was withdrawn. But, you know, even now they are testing on drugs. I mean, I've got a file. I won't show you. It's on the floor. But I've got a fat file and it's health scandals. And it goes back years. And, of course, the contaminated blood is high on there. But, you know, they're also with antidepressants. They're giving different drugs that would actually treat epilepsy for antidepressant because they're saying, oh, well, that'll do. It kind of works. But there are tremendous side effects, which they are well aware of. Yeah. And then the antidepressants they were prescribing, which was supposed to be directly for that, they created terrible side effects, including suicidal feelings, and many people committed suicide and they just carry on.
It's shocking, and if I was a parent, I don't know how I'd feel. I don't think there'd be any compensation enough to no. I mean, there would be no compensation to make you feel better about it. I just want to go to another. It's impossible. Money won't fix the death of your child, especially if you know they were victims of a state-sponsored experiment, essentially. I got to talk about this. I know you do go on to GB News, but Ofcom's now considering sanctions again against GB News, this time because apparently, well, not just serious and repeated breaches, but apparently they just didn't challenge Rishi Sunak enough. What do you make of this story? And you're an insider, because you do appear on that station.
Yes. Do you know, I think Ofcom would do anything to take GB News off air. I think it is absolutely a fantastic station. And so I'm not saying that because I do work for them. I feel privileged to work for them because I thought that beforehand. So when I was asked, it was like, whoop-de-woo. But now, interestingly, I watched the whole interview and I thought it was very appropriate to get Rishi up there to talk and to be questioned by the audience. It wasn't a select audience, it was just people that came randomly. And they questioned him and asked him about certain things. And it was correct at the time. It still would be very appropriate because there was a lack of trust in him, very much so. Anyway, at the end of it, and I think we have to see this in context, after that interview, the audience were then asked what they thought of Sunak. Would they vote conservative or not. And funnily enough, this actually kind of like proved a point. So I thought in the end, then this is what I'm saying, see it in the round. It did no favours at all to go on there, because most people came out going, well, after that, no, I'm not going to vote Conservative.
we have to leave it there. That's the subject I want to come back to with you. It's great to see you, Ingrid. I'll give you a call. I owe you lunch. Thanks for coming on. I will get you on soon. That is Ingrid Tarrant. Great, effervescent and always wise. Coming up in the next hour, we've got somebody else who fits that bill. That's Basil from TNT, and lots more, talking about many scandals in the UK. I'm Len Bitovic. This is TNT. See you in a few minutes.